All right, everyone, get ready for a deep dive. And this time we're getting our feet wet. Well, not really, but we're diving into the world of oysters.
Okay.
And I'm not just talking about how delicious they are, though, let's be real for a second. Who doesn't love a good oyster happy hour? We're going way beyond the half shell today to uncover how these underwater superheroes are dealing with, well, the rising tide of ocean acidification.
Yeah, you see, oysters are facing a pretty big challenge, really. As our oceans, they absorb more and more CO2.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're trying to build a house in a rainstorm.
Oh, no.
Except the rain is dissolving their bricks.
Oh, yikes. That's not a recipe for success.
No. Not at all. Not at all. But what's really fascinating is that oysters might be passing down, you know, that ability to cope with these much tougher conditions to their offspring, even without changes to their DNA.
What?
And it's called environmental memory.
Environmental memory. Okay, now that sounds like something straight out of a sci-fi movie.
Sure.
Tell me more.
All right, think about it like this. Your genes, they're like a cookbook, right?
Okay.
And those environmental memories, well, they're like notes that are scribbled in the margins.
Yeah.
You know, little tweaks and adjustments to the recipe, you know, for different situations.
So the basic recipe, the DNA stays the same, but those notes, they help the oysters adapt?
Right.
That's incredible. But how do we actually know that this is happening?
Well, that's where today's deep dive comes in. We're looking at a study on eastern oysters, or Crassulescaria virginica, and how ocean acidification affects them at a molecular level.
So we're going microscopic, looking for clues in their DNA.
Precisely. The researchers, what they did is they simulated future ocean conditions. They exposed these oysters to elevated levels of CO2 for 30 days. Then they analyzed their reproductive tissues, gonad tissue from the females and sperm from the males.
Okay. So looking for those like telltale scribbles in the margins, right? How many oysters were part of this microscopic investigation?
Yeah, they had 16 females, yeah. 8 in a control group with normal CO2 levels, and then 8 exposed to those higher levels.
Okay.
And for the males, they had 10. 4 in the control and 6 exposed.
Got it. So not a massive group, but enough to give us some clues, right? So did they find any significant changes? Were those like acidic conditions causing like, you know, genetic chaos?
Now you would think you'd expect to see some major genetic freakouts, right? With all that stress.
Right, yeah.
But surprisingly, the researchers, they didn't find those big gene expression changes that they were expecting.
Really? No massive genetic shifts. That's unexpected.
Yeah.
It seems like these oysters have a more, like, subtle strategy up their shells.
Exactly. And that's where things get really interesting.
Yeah.
It seems like they're adapting at a much more nuanced level. Imagine the researchers were looking at a cookbook, but they were only focusing on the ingredient list, not the actual recipes, right? They needed to zoom in closer.
Okay, so if the genes are the ingredients, what are the recipes?
The recipes are what are called transcripts, the specific instructions encoded by the genes.
So instead of just seeing if a gene was on or off, they were looking at the precise messages it was sending out, right? Like the difference between having flour in your pantry versus actually using it to bake a cake.
A perfect analogy. And when they looked at the transcripts, they found some really intriguing changes.
All right, hit me with the highlights. What kind of recipe changes were happening in these acidified oysters?
Well, they made 3 key discoveries. First, the maximum number of transcripts produced by some genes that changed under those high CO2 conditions. Some genes started making more unique transcripts while others made fewer.
So some recipes were getting more complex, others were getting simplified. Did this depend on whether the oyster was male or female?
It did. That was the really interesting part. Females had more genes producing fewer transcripts, while males had more genes with more.
Interesting. It's like the females were streamlining their recipe book while the males were getting more elaborate in the kitchen. What was the second finding? So last time on our oyster epigenetics deep dive, we were talking about how these oysters are dealing with the stress of ocean acidification, and they're not really making these big, you know, like sweeping genetic changes. They're kind of tweaking the recipes encoded by their genes.
Yeah, you got it. The real changes were happening at the level of transcripts. Those are, you know, those specific instructions for building proteins. And if you remember, we left off talking about those transcript patterns that differed between males and females.
Right. It was like the females were going minimalist in the kitchen, simplifying their recipes, and then the males, they were adding all sorts of like fancy new steps. What else did the researchers find?
So the second key discovery was all about like shifts in which transcript was the most common one. It's like, almost like swapping out one key ingredient for another, right? You still get a slightly different flavor, but it's still recognizable as the same dish.
Okay, I'm following. So the core recipe, the gene, remained the same, but the main ingredient, that predominant transcript, got switched out.
You got it. And those shifts happen in about 6% of the genes in females and a much higher 17% in males.
Wow, those male oysters are really feeling the heat. So what else did this whole OA shakeup reveal?
Right. So the third thing that they found was all about how those recipes are actually being, like, interpreted. Think of it like this, right? You've got the same list of instructions, but under OA, the oysters might, like, skip a step or add a pinch of something extra, you know, ultimately changing the final product.
So same ingredients, but slightly different execution. That could make a big difference in the end result.
Exactly. It's called alternative splicing. And it's a way for these organisms to, like, create a greater diversity of proteins from the same gene.
Fascinating. But let's get back to those environmental memories we were discussing earlier. Where does methylation fit into all of this? Is it acting like a master chef, you know, kind of overseeing all these recipe revisions?
That's a great question. And that's kind of like the million-dollar question. Methylation's role in all of this is still a bit of a mystery. You see, it's not as simple as methylation directly, you know, flipping those genes on or off. It's definitely more nuanced than that.
So more like a dimmer switch than a light switch then.
Exactly. It's about fine-tuning, right? It's like fine-tuning the volume of gene expression, making sure that everything runs nice and smooth, especially for those female oysters that are producing eggs.
So methylation is all about maintaining order in the oyster kitchen, preventing chaos when those acidic conditions start, like, heating things up.
Precisely. And remember those transcript patterns we discussed earlier?
Yeah.
Well, the researchers found some really intriguing connections to methylation.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about these connections.
So the study suggests that methylation might be helping to reduce something called transcriptional noise.
Transcriptional noise? What's that?
Okay, so imagine, you know, you're trying to have a conversation in a really noisy restaurant. It's hard to hear over all that clatter, right? Transcriptional noise is similar. It's all those random fluctuations in gene expression that can kind of interfere with those important messages.
So methylation is like noise-canceling headphones for the oyster's genes.
You got it. By reducing that noise, methylation might be helping to ensure that the essential messages, they get through loud and clear, especially when it comes to producing healthy eggs.
Wow, that's a pretty important job. So the female oysters are keeping things, like, calm and collected in the kitchen, making sure those eggs are top-notch. What about the males? How is methylation impacting them?
Well, remember how the males showed a lot more variation in their transcript patterns? Like, their kitchens were, I don't know, maybe a bit more chaotic?
Right, yeah.
What they found was really interesting, though. The researchers found that elevated CO2 actually increased that transcriptional noise in the males.
So the males were a bit more, I don't know, expressive in their response to that stress?
You could say that.
Oh.
But while there was more noise in the male oysters, it wasn't entirely random.
Okay, so there is a method to the madness. But what does it all mean? How do these methylation patterns and, like, all these transcript changes, how do they actually affect the oysters in real life?
That's the question we'll be exploring in the final part of our deep dive. We'll uncover how these really tiny molecular level tweaks might hold the key to understanding that environmental memory and how it could help oysters adapt to, you know, to a changing ocean. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the deep dive. We're wrapping up our exploration of how those amazing oysters are adapting to ocean acidification. And let me tell you, it's a story full of twists and turns.
It really is. We've gone from genes to transcripts to methylation, and, like, we've uncovered some pretty fascinating clues about how oysters might be using that environmental memory to cope with these, you know, really challenging conditions.
Right. But as with any good mystery, like, uncovering those clues has just led to, like, even more questions.
Exactly.
So where do we go from here? What are the next steps in this, like, scientific whodunit?
Well, one of the biggest questions is how those epigenetic changes are passed down through, you know, to future generations. We talked about, you know, inheriting methylation patterns or even, like, a whole system for, you know, regulating genes. But the exact mechanism is still unclear.
Right.
More research is definitely needed to, like, crack that code.
Yeah, it's like finding a treasure map but not knowing the starting point. Are there other big questions that this study leaves us with?
Absolutely. This study gave us, like, you know, just a snapshot in time, right?
Yeah.
But how do those epigenetic and transcriptomic responses, how do those change over longer periods of, you know, exposure to high CO2? It's like we just watched the trailer for a movie. We need the full feature film to really see how this adaptation story plays out, you know, over generations.
Mm-hmm. And we can't forget that this research was all done in a lab, right? How do those findings actually, like, translate to the real world, where oysters face, you know, a whole buffet of challenges, not just ocean acidification?
Right.
It's a bit like comparing a cooking show to my own, like, chaotic kitchen.
Exactly. There's always more nuance in the real world. Mm-hmm. But despite that, you know, this study, it offers a really exciting glimpse into how life adapts. It shows the power of epigenetics, those, you know, those notes in the margins to help organisms, you know, deal with change.
Yeah, it really highlights the resilience of nature, doesn't it? It's like, I don't know, learning a new cooking technique to, you know, make the most of what you have on hand.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
But while it's definitely reassuring to know that oysters have these tools in their kit, you know, we can't just sit back and rely on them to weather this storm of climate change.
Right. We have to do our part. So for all our listeners out there, why does this matter? Why should we care about what's happening at, like, you know, the molecular level in an oyster?
It's about recognizing the interconnectedness of, you know, of life,
mm-hmm.
right? The ocean's health impacts all of us. And, you know, beyond that, even, it's about just appreciating this sheer ingenuity of nature. These, you know what I mean? These tiny creatures. What they're showing us is that life, it finds a way, often in ways we never even, like, expected.
It's a powerful message of hope and a call to action all in one. So keep exploring, stay curious, and who knows what fascinating mysteries we'll uncover together next time, right here on The Deep Dive.